Hi, this is Bob Hoffman, author of Marketers Are From Mars, Consumers Are From New Jersey, and you're listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer in 2016. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, we're joined by Bob Hoffman. We're going to talk about his book, Marketers Are From Mars, Consumers Are From New Jersey. Bob Hoffman is a writer, speaker, and advisor. He is the author of the popular Ad Contrarian blog, named one of the world's most influential marketing and advertising blogs by Business Insider. Bob is also the author of 101 Contrarian Ideas About Advertising, which became Amazon's number one selling advertising book. Bob has been the CEO of two independent ad agencies and the U.S. operation of an international agency. He has created advertising for McDonald's, Toyota, PepsiCo, Bank of America, AT&T, and more companies than he cares to think about. Through his company, Type A Group, Bob advises advertisers, agencies, and the media. But who is Bob Hoffman really? Here's what others have said about him. The Wall Street Journal calls Bob Hoffman caustic yet truthful. Time magazine calls him fabulously irreverent. The Financial Times says he's responsible for savage critiques of digital hype. Inc. magazine says he pulls absolutely no punches. And Michael Gass's Fuel Lines blog calls him the most provocative man in advertising. Bob, congratulations on Marketers Are From Mars, Consumers Are From New Jersey, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Douglas. Appreciate you having me on.
So just a word to the listener, there's a chance, a slight chance, well, it's probably 100% chance that there's going to be some colorful language here.
Fuck the listener.
Wait, Bob, wait. I was going to say particularly the more colorful word for bovine feces. So just to the listener, if you're listening to this while driving the kids to school and they can hear it, just turn it off, put on Radio Disney or whatever the kids are listening to these days, and come back and listen to it when others won't be able to hear it. So I just wanted to say, you know, there's a bit of a warning there, although the cat is already out of the bag. So, Bob, we met at Michael Gass's Fuel Lines Ad Agency New Business Conference, where you were the keynote speaker, and I was honored to introduce you because Michael Gass had poor judgment to make me the master of ceremonies, but it was a lot of fun, and it was a fantastic keynote. And
thank you.
I enjoyed meeting you there, and I just wanted to mention one thing about your book, the dedication.
Yeah,
it's like you made it out to me, Bob.
really?
We're both from agency backgrounds. I'm still in that game, but the dedication for the book, it spoke to me like nothing else, and it's particularly the first sentence. This book is dedicated to all the funny, cynical, amateur bastards I worked with in the agency business. It is not dedicated to all the venal, duplicitous, scheming bastards I also worked with.
Yeah, I've worked with them all.
Yeah.
And it's, it's true of the agency business. There are a lot of great people in the agency business. There are also a lot of snakes and lizards. And
yeah.
So it's, which makes it an interesting business. It makes it fun sometimes and frustrating other times.
Well, wasn't it, you talk about snakes in the business, wasn't J.R. Haldeman, he was one of Nixon's henchmen, and he was behind the Watergate break-ins, and he also went to prison.
Can I tell you a funny story about Bob Haldeman? Yeah.
You and he were both California ad men.
Yes. Well, I had a very large client, Dole, you know, fruits and that juices and stuff like that. And Dole was bought by a guy named David Murdoch, who was a very rich, rich guy. And after he bought Dole, he brought in Bob Haldeman as a consultant. This is after Haldeman had gotten out of jail, right?
Oh, wow.
And I hated Haldeman. I mean, I just, everything I read about, that whole Watergate stuff, I just hated the guy. And so Haldeman comes to our office to, you know, give us the once over to see if we're, you know, capable of handling Murdoch's account.
Now, did he break into the office at night?
That's good. No, he walked in like a gentleman. And you know what? I couldn't help myself. I liked the guy. I swear, I liked the guy. He was funny. He was charming. And it just goes to, now I'm sure there was, you know, obviously he did some very bad things in his career with Nixon. But it just shows you that the media image you have of people, you can't judge them by what you see on television, what you read in the newspaper. People are so, every time I've met celebrities or famous people, they're never what I thought they would be.
Oh, wow.
They're either a lot better or a lot worse usually.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting.
But you brought him up, so there you go.
You go. Yeah. Well, you know, the stories are pretty rich, particularly the ones in your book. Let me start with a quote from the beginning.
Yeah.
The marketing industry is currently in the midst of a mass delusion of epic proportions. This includes the gross exaggeration of the role of brands, the mangling of the role of ad agencies, the mistaking of gimmicks for trends, the abandonment of the most powerful consumer group the world has ever seen, the wishful thinking of social media marketing, and the fraud and corruption of digital advertising. It's quite an amazing menu.
Yeah. Other than that, we're doing great. You know.
Right. So, Bob, tell us the story. How did this book come to be, and why you wrote it, and who you had in mind when you wrote it?
Well, the impetus for writing the book was that I was hoping that someday I could be on your podcast.
Mm-hmm. It's important to have goals.
Yeah, and you know, dreams come true. You know, chicks dig authors, so I had to write a book.
I'm writing this down.
Let's see. Why did I write that? I write because I love to write, and the only thing I know about is advertising. So I write about advertising, and this book is. What I'm not trying to do is to convince anyone of anything. I learned a long time ago that doesn't work. You're not going to change people's opinions. I think Jack Trout once wrote a great, he said, if your assignment is to change people's minds, don't accept the assignment. but there are people in the advertising and marketing world who I think are like me, and they look around and they say, are these people crazy? What's going on here? And I just want those people to know that if they are crazy, they're not the only ones who are crazy. I'm crazy too. Mm-hmm. I want them to have some feeling that there is backup for what they're thinking, because I'm thinking it also. Then there are also selfish reasons to write the book. The book helps me get speaking gigs, and I love to do speaking gigs, and they make money. So let's not pretend it's all for humanity. Some of it's for me too. So that's why I wrote the book. And, you know, I write it out of frustration. I just see so much baloney. There's so much bullshit in the advertising and marketing world that, I just feel like I have to, even though my career in advertising is over, I feel like I owe it to the advertising industry in some way to give them the opinion of some crazy old guy who's seen a lot.
Right. Well, you know, almost every chapter of your book brought to mind a scene from one of the greatest movies in American cinematic history, which is Zoolander. And that's that's when Will Ferrell is in his office and he's really, really frustrated. And he said, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I saw that, but I think that people might be surprised at how much data there's in the book. I mean, you really back it up. And I've seen at your keynote, you talk about, you put specific, and these aren't just studies or things you've dreamed up. This is data.
This is real facts.
Yeah, yeah, which makes it more painful.
Yeah, I feel a responsibility to do that, because so much of the misinformation is just based on the assertions of so-called experts, mm-hmm. that I feel to disarm that baloney, I need to come at it with facts. If it's just me getting up, making assertions, that doesn't do anything. But I try to, as much as possible, give people facts about what's happening in the real world and how different it is from the world you read about in advertising and marketing, trade publications and newspapers. And let me just give you an example. I was doing an analysis yesterday, because I'm giving a talk this week, on video viewing in the fourth quarter of 2015. I took out the Nielsen numbers. And live TV, the average American watches 2,093 minutes of live TV a week. You know how many minutes of video they watch on a smartphone a week?
Nine.
Take a guess. 17 minutes.
Sorry.
Right? You know how much they watch on a PC? 89 minutes compared to 2,093. And yet, if you were to read, you'd think nobody watches television anymore. Mm-hmm. All the video is being consumed on the web. No, it's not even close. It's not even in the same ballpark. And yet that's all we hear about and all we read about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you, what do you mean at the beginning of the book when you say there's no bullshit like brand bullshit?
Okay. There's no bullshit like brand. People in our business take a little bit of truth and they twist it and they torture it into ridiculous delusions. And one of the delusions is the brand delusion. Now, we know that the highest goal of every marketer and advertiser is to create a powerful brand. There's no question about that. That's what we're all trying to do. But somehow we have taken that to mean that consumers love brands and they want to have brand relationships and they want to co-create with brands. And it's all baloney. A study by...
They should go get a room or something?
Yes. A study by Havas Media showed that in the U.S. and Western Europe, consumers wouldn't care if 92% of brands disappeared from the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. So the fact that brands are so important to us, creating, doesn't mean that consumers are in love with brands. You know, I promise you, if Pepsi disappeared tomorrow, Pepsi brand loyalists would have a Coke without needing psychological intervention. They're not in love with the brand. Most of what we call brand loyalty is either mild satisfaction, habit, convenience, or just easy availability. We call it brand loyalty. It's not, we're not that loyal to most brands.
Yeah, you say that success of a brand is not uniquely related to high degrees of brand loyalty.
Yeah. Have you read Professor Byron Sharp's book, How Brands Grow? That's a much better book to read than mine. So if you haven't read that,
get him on the show, yeah.
Read that one first. And he dispels all the brand baloney and the brand loyalty. Pepsi's a perfect example. 72% of Pepsi drinkers also drink Coke. And if you think about it, brand loyalty is like... We think that the heavy users in a category are the most loyal users. They're not. Heavy users tend to be promiscuous. Think about it. If you're a heavy fast food user, you go to McDonald's, you go to Taco Bell, and yet, if 4 out of 10 times you go to McDonald's, McDonald's thinks of you as a brand lover. You know, if you go to if you have a fast food user who goes to McDonald's 4 times a week. They say, wow, this is a super heavy user. This is one of our brand loyalists. Well, he probably goes for fast food 10 times a week, and most of the time he doesn't go to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So we misinterpret that as strong brand loyalty, and it's not. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that there are some brands that aren't powerful. And it doesn't mean that we aren't loyal to a handful of brands. All of us are. But remember, we participated in hundreds of product categories. Think of all the crap that's in your refrigerator and your garage and in your closet. I mean, hundreds of brands. And maybe we're loyal to, you know, a handful.
Well, let's talk about, you know, online advertising, and interactive. Why does interactivity make advertising less effective?
Advertising was most effective when you couldn't turn it off, right? When there were three TV networks and you were stuck there in front of the TV, and you if you wanted to change the channel, you had to get up and walk across the room and change the channel. And
and as an agency guy, I call those the good old days.
Yeah. I mean, those were the days when advertising ruled, right?
Yeah.
I mean, couldn't escape from it. But as soon as you became able to interact with a medium, like the minute you got a remote control, the advertising came on, you could interact. So what did you do? You changed the channel. And it's the same with all media. The radio, as soon as the push button radio came into the car, what did you do? When a song came on that you didn't like, you pushed the button. And it's the same with all media. The easier it is to escape from advertising, the more people will do it. As a matter of fact, interactivity, I think, makes advertising less effective. People use interactivity to escape from advertising far more than they do to, quote, interact with it.
But yet there's still this longing for sort of interactivity nirvana.
Yeah, there's a fantasy. There's a fantasy that people want to interact with advertising. And it started, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, when the interactive advertising industry, if we can call it an industry, came around to agencies and to marketers and said, look, we have advertising that your customers are going to interact with. They're going to want to go deeper. They're going to want to find out more stuff. They're going to want to, and you know, we bought into this. Wow, this is going to be great. So it's not just something that's sitting there talking to people. People can actually interact with it and learn stuff and go deeper. And we bought into this fantasy that never happened and never existed. You know what the rate of interactivity is now with banner ads? It's somewhere generously around 8 in 10,000. I mean, that's not interact. That's absence of interactivity. A company called Solve Media, who measures this stuff, says that you're more likely to complete Navy SEAL training than to click on a banner ad. I mean, that's stunning.
Not that you and I couldn't, Bob.
Oh, I have. I don't know about you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But interacting with online advertising is a complete myth. And if you notice, the online advertising industry has changed. They don't call it interactive advertising anymore. They call it digital advertising. They call it display advertising. They sent the word interactivity up to bed to go to sleep because it was being bad.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that digital media has been the primary beneficiary of delusional thinking. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Three things. First is there are three big delusions that we're suffering from. First is the brand delusion, that people want to have conversations with brands and co-create with the brand, all that stuff. Second is the...
Oh, excuse me. Let me interrupt. Bob, I think at one point in the book you said that the truth is people don't want to get screwed over and they don't want to pay they don't want to pay too much.
Yeah.
That's their expectation.
Yeah. The second delusion is that is about digital that people want to interact. So the first delusion is conversations with brand. The second delusion is that interactivity made advertising more, effective, and people want to interact with brands. And the third is the obsession with millennials, because millennials are digital natives. We've become obsessed with them. So these three digital kind of delusions are what's feeding a lot of the fantasies about online advertising.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned millennials. Bob, why do marketers hate old people?
Marketers hate old people because we like the excitement of youth. We don't like the boredom of middle age and the frailties of old age. We like the excitement of youth. And so we have created all these baloney excuses for why we direct all our advertising at young people and none of the advertising at people over 50, who are the most valuable generation in the history of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's marketing by selfie stick. It's narcissism disguised as strategy. We market to ourselves. We don't want to talk to old. We can't build a hot advertising career for ourselves by talking to 60-year-old farts.
I think some people are going to say, well, we want to catch them when they're young.
Yeah. Why do you want to catch them when they're young? Are you going to – they don't have money. They're not buying what you're selling. People over 50 are responsible for more than half the consumer spending in the country. They outspend the average consumer in virtually every product category. They account for 55% of all consumer packaged goods. They outspend other adults online, 2 to 1 on a per capita basis. They buy about 60% of all new cars. Here's a great fact, Douglas. You know, all the young people, the young attractive people we see in car commercials. Well, people 75 to dead buy 6 times as many new cars as people 18 to 24. And if people over 50, if Americans over 50 were their own country, they would be the third largest economy in the world, larger than Japan, larger than Germany, larger than India. And yet we ignore them. We target them for 10% of marketing and advertising activity.
Mm. And I think it's actually going to increase. It's going to go even higher.
Yeah. What's going to increase? The amount we spend on them or the amount we ignore
them?
The size of
their economic prowess.
That's one of the things that one of the dumbass excuses that marketers give. Well, the older people are dying. We have to get baloney. The people over 50 are growing at between now and 2030. People over 50 will grow at about three times the rate of adults under 50. People over 50 are going to grow 34% between now and 2030. People under 50 are going to grow 12%.
Mm, mm.
But we have invented all kinds of bullshit for why we ignore these people. And the real reason we ignore them is we hate them. It's true.
There's one part about that where you talk about some of the biggest mistakes advertisers make when advertising to grown-ups.
Yeah.
Can you share some of those?
Yeah. Number one, they advertise to their age rather than their interests. People don't like to be told, hey, old-timer, you need it. Forget that.
Hey, Pop.
Advertise to their interests, not their ages. Number two, they don't want to be like young people. Do they want to be youthful? Yes, they want to be youthful, but they don't want to be like young people. There's a very important distinction there that our industry totally doesn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Obama does not want to be like Miley Cyrus, I guarantee you. She wants to be youthful, but she doesn't want to be like a young person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well, when I read through it, I just thought, yes, gosh, that is, it was so. It was a great deconstruction of all this, pretty awful advertising I see, where it's probably being created by a 22-year-old,
absolutely
wearing a black turtleneck, living in a loft in Manhattan.
Right. They have no idea how to talk to older people. They've never been, you know, someone who is 50 was once 28. So they kind of have an idea of what that's like. Someone who's 28 has never been 50. So they don't know what the hell that's like. And so they write it for their friends.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, not only that, but you talk about how marketers understand so little about their consumers.
Yes.
And it was interesting, and I think very true, when you suggested that if people who are marketing to whatever group or advertising to them, if they would visit Walmart and the DMV, their message would improve dramatically. Why is that?
Because they live in a bubble. They live in a bubble of people like us. They you know, they go, there's like a whole other America that the advertising and marketing industry doesn't understand. They don't go to the same restaurants. They don't eat the same foods. They don't wear the same clothes. They don't watch Netflix every night. They are way different from us. And if you go to the DMV, you see them there. You don't see them in the restaurants that we go to. You don't see them, you know, planners have no idea who these people are. They think they know, they don't. And, you know, if you see what's going on in politics these days, you kind of get the feeling, oh, now I see, we don't really get what a lot of America is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that on both sides, where are these commentators who are probably in a similar bubble next door to the advertising people.
Yep.
They don't it's like they're, this whole campaign season has been this big shock to them.
Yeah.
Either Democrat or Republican. Who are these people voting for? Fill in the blank.
Yeah. You know, I say that in my talk, I say that the marketing industry, the way they think is, I have to get my customer to co-create with me. I have to understand my target audience and get them engaged in the, and what the customer is thinking is, hey, is there going to be parking? Is this fucking thing going to work? They don't want to return it. Yeah, they don't want conversations with marketers. What? Get out of here. Conversation with a marketer. I don't want to have a conversation with my husband. What the hell do I want to have a conversation with a marketer for?
You were talking to my wife?
Well, it was just a chat.
Okay. It's fine. That's fine. Yeah, no, it's very true. And I think at one point in the book he said, here's the secret. Just make a better product.
Yeah. Well, the marketing, you know, we've taken marketing and we've made it this big, you know, important thing. Marketing, is, as far as I'm concerned, is three things. You make a good product, you take good care of your customers, and you make some good ads. If you do those three things, your probability of success is so much higher than anything else. And all the rest is chit-chat. All the rest is incrementalism. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, and boy, do marketers want to complicate everything they possibly can.
They complicate the shit out of everything. Thinking simply has been beaten out of the marketing. If you speak simply, you cannot get ahead in any advertising or marketing organization by speaking simply and saying, you know, the reason people buy most things is because they're prettier, they taste better, they look nicer, they're cheaper, or they're just more readily available. That's why people buy most stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not because they have a relationship, an engagement with the brand. Get at it. It's
aspirational.
Aspirational.
Yeah. Let me ask you to explain, or just to elaborate on one section where you said for almost 20 years, advertising programs, marketing courses, and professional development classes taught people principles that can now be labeled either seriously flawed or outright baloney.
Yeah. It's, you know what it's like? It's like for 2,000 years, doctors took sick people and bled them, right? They drew blood from them.
That was a best practice, Bob.
Yeah, that was a best practice for 2,000 years. And why did they do that? Because that's what they were taught in school. and they kept being taught that in school. And every now and then, someone they bled got better, right? One out of 30 got better. So they kept doing it, and they kept doing it. And we're doing the same thing. For 20 years, advertising and marketing students have been taught that people want to interact with advertising, that people are in love with brands, that people are going on social media and having conversations about brands, and they're talking about brands with their friends, and they're amplifying, you know, someone writes. Joining the conversation. And they've been taught this, and they believe it. And so they keep on doing it, even though the facts say it ain't working very well. Go to the nearest supermarket, go to Target, go to a walkthrough, and show me the brands that have been built by online advertising. It's been 20 years. I want to see those brands. Where are they? Where are the brands of soda? Where are the brands of fast food? Where are the brands of beer and toothpaste and soap and shampoo that have been built by online advertising? I'm sorry, I don't see them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, explain what you mean when you think that you say that social media marketing is the biggest disappointment since the NFL hired referees.
Yeah, that's a pretty good line, huh?
One of many.
Social media itself is a huge worldwide phenomenon. There's no question about that. Everyone's on social media and it's a huge worldwide phenomenon. But social media marketing has turned out, for the most part, to be a huge disappointment. I mean, all you have to do is look at Facebook to know that Facebook was supposed to be the place where you could do social media and it would cost you nothing. You would post something about your brand and it would be amplified by people who would share it and blah, blah, blah. And everyone was saying, this is going to kill advertising because you're not going to have to spend money on advertising anymore because social media is going to do it for you for free. And then all of a sudden now, so Facebook, it's traditional paid advertising. Forget social media. It's a social media platform, but what you're seeing there is traditional paid advertising because the social media fantasy has evaporated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. Who is it? McKinsey, I think. McKinsey did a study on social media. They found that email is 40 times more effective than social media on Twitter and Facebook combined.
Yes, yes.
Right? Yeah, so you know, everyone was hopeful. Social media is going to, you know what? People have more important things in their lives than sharing their enthusiasm for furniture polish. So, they have other things. They have kids who need taken care of. They have parents who need taken care of. Yeah.
So this is a great story to tell when people say advertising is dead.
Yeah. Advertising is dead, except you can't walk outside. Every square inch of the planet is covered in advertising, and these schmucks are telling us advertising is dead. Mm-hmm. Advertising is so not dead. The web was supposed to be the antidote for advertising, right? It was medicine for advertising. Advertising was going to disappear. Here comes the web. Baloney. There's more advertising than ever. You can't escape from advertising.
Mm-hmm. And your beef is not with, you know, the advertising that is on social media is there because it's working enormously well. But you talk quite a bit about the big house of cards that is online advertising, not necessarily pay-per-click, but like banner ads and that type of thing. And you say, I never make predictions, but online advertising is a train wreck waiting to happen.
Yeah,
explain.
It's happening already.
Let's talk about the fraud mainly. That's the thing that just blew me away.
Yeah, the amount of fraud on the web is startling. I don't know if you saw the piece last week, but Facebook was doing a new ad buying platform that it was had tested for a year, and it just shut it down. And the quote is, Facebook, quote, amazed by volume of valueless inventory. They were amazed by the volume of valueless inventory that was in their ad exchange. Mm-hmm. They said they turned off 75% of the volume coming into its ad exchange. Now, does that mean that 75% of the volume was fraudulent? I don't know. I don't know what that 75% number represents, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the numbers on online ad fraud are just shocking.
You talk about how, I think the Wall Street Journal said over half the online display ads paid for by marketers are unviewable.
Yeah, 56% of online ads in a study they did were, I don't know if Wall Street Journal did, the Wall Street Journal reported on the study. I think it was done by someone else. And the New York Times reported on a study that 57% of video ads online were unviewable. But you have to understand, these unviewable stuff, that's not necessarily fraud. Only part of that is fraud. Some of it is just that it runs below the fold, or that it's or that it doesn't load in time for someone to see it. But there's all kinds of other frauds. There's traffic fraud, which are bots pretending they're people. There's click fraud, which is bots pretending they're people also. There is spoofing or ghost websites, that kind of fraud. There's agency kickback fraud, which is now being examined by the Association of National Advertisers. They have an investigation going on of how agencies are spending client money in online advertising. Then there's the black box of ad tech, taking 55 to 60% of an advertiser's money as an intermediary. I mean, the amount is just staggering.
Yeah, it just made me start thinking about like the mortgage collapse in 2008, yep. or Enron or something. It's just, it's criminal. And it brought to mind, at one point I was working in an agency in New York, and I won't say the name, but its initials were JWT. Uh-huh. And years after I had been there, I remember Adweek, I think, did a big study, a big story about how there were some people at that agency and a couple others. They were, this happened to have been the print production guys. Uh-huh. And some of these guys went to prison.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing about online advertising is that no one has gone to prison. No one has been fired. I mean, there's too much money in it. No one wants to kill the golden goose. And, you know, online advertising has been kind of a lifesaver for the agency business. The agency business was in the doldrums. The creative work was turning lousy. Clients were getting dissatisfied. And along comes online advertising. And now the agency business has something new and shiny to sell. And so nobody wants to kill that golden goose. The agencies don't want to kill it. The publishers don't want to kill it. The online sales people don't want to kill it. But it's in danger. You know, I don't know if you know who Doc Searls is. He's a brilliant guy in Harvard, and he wrote the Clue. He was one of the writers of the Clue Train Manifesto in the late 90s, which predicted a lot of what's going on. He says that right now we're in the midst of the largest consumer boycott in history, and that is ad blocking. 200 million people worldwide have installed ad blockers to get away from online advertising. And that is a big threat to the online advertising industry. Now, fortunately for the online advertising industry, marketers are so stupid, they don't even know what's going on. They continue to buy more and more online advertising. They just can't help themselves. They don't know what they're buying. They don't know who they're buying it from. They don't know what they're getting. They don't know how much they're paying, but they just want more of it. Mm. And so, who knows? You know, I'm probably crazy.
No, I keep going back to that bloodletting notion. Yeah. They did it for 2,000 years or however many. It's just, you know, that's what so-and-so does.
That's what you do.
I guess we better keep buying it. But it just seems like it's going to get – it could get very, very ugly and then crash and burn, and there might be a silver lining.
It could be. What needs to happen, in my opinion, is that right now, the online advertising industry is represented by the Interactive Advertising Bureau, or as I call them, the Inactive Advertising Bureau. And all they do is issue press releases making excuses for why everything is such a mess online. They need some kind of organization that is going to enforce some discipline on the industry. Just, you know, we have, there are rules about what you can do on television and rules about what you can do in print and radio. And there are no rules online. Every sleazebag company in the world is selling online advertising and phony websites and phony traffic and phony clicks. And they're not doing anything about it. And to me, it all relates to ad tech. If they just get rid of the tracking, if they get rid of the constant consumer surveillance, which they are doing, it all becomes much easier and much cleaner. But they can't get out of their own way. They can't. If they would do that, it would solve so many of the problems they're faced with.
Yeah. You know, speaking of display ads, you mentioned that clicks are important, and yet that industry is now saying, "Well, clicks aren't that important. It's more like an outdoor board." Can you explain that rich thinking?
Yes, I can. In the beginning, the online advertising industry told us that on one of the reasons online advertising would be so much more beneficial to advertisers was that we would know exactly what the results are because we could count the clicks. And so we'd know if an ad was effective enough. People clicked on it. They noticed it. It was effective. Good. Okay, so that was great. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Except then they found that nobody was clicking on ads. So now what do you say? Uh-oh, that didn't work. So now we need something. Oh, clicks don't mean anything. Now, all of a sudden, clicks don't mean anything. Clicks are just, that doesn't mean anything. What matters is an engagement, whatever the hell that means. And so now they're trying to sell us, or not just now, but it's been going on for 10 years, 5 or 7 years, that the clicks are irrelevant. It's like outdoor. People see the ad and they remember it. Well, the truth is the impact of online advertising is tiny. Nobody remembers display ads. And that's why we're getting all these horrifying auto start ads and page takeovers and pop-ups and to try to get some attention to online advertising. And that's feeding the ad blocking that's happening now. So it's an arms race of advertisers trying to get our attention on the web and us trying to avoid that.
Mm. Yeah, pay no attention to the man behind that curtain.
Right.
So, Bob, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
It would be to give yourself the wonderful freedom of skepticism. Don't believe everything you read. Get to know the facts and draw your own opinions about what's happening in the world from the facts, not from the opinions and assertions of others.
Mm. Well said. And your book, I think, can help people with that. And there was even a part at the end that I loved where you showed a piece of an article,
yeah,
and then you deconstructed it to show how they were manipulating the research to tell their story. You actually went back to it a couple times and said, okay, now let's go back.
Yep. That's
it was like a Bob Hoffman masterclass.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of information that's not information, that's manipulated to look better than it really is. And, you know, fortunately, at one point in my life, I was a science teacher, so I have a little idea of how these tricks with statistics are done. Mm-hmm. And I try to go back and show how that happens.
Yeah, you say at one point that a lot of what one reads about digital advertising is unreliable, and then you go through and explain why. What books have inspired your work and career?
Honestly, I have read, I think I've read one marketing book and one advertising book in my life. I've written more books than I've read about advertising and marketing because, frankly, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you read all those books for these authors that you're talking to. To me, I just couldn't do it. I kind of learned the advertising and marketing. I'm not really a marketing guy. I'm more of an advertising guy on the job. I never studied it. I never in school, and I think that helps me. Uh-huh. I think it's good. I think it's good to have learned it yourself, kind of, because it makes you skeptical. It makes you, as someone who taught science, Richard Feynman, the great physicist, said. He said, science is the belief in the ignorance of experts. And I think my opinions about advertising and marketing come from my belief that most of the so-called experts are not experts. They're just people with big mouths like me. And so I kind of invented it myself. But the books that have influenced me, How Brands Grow, by Professor Byron Sharp.
Oh, we'll make anything, sure to include a link to that too, because you've mentioned that a couple times.
Yeah. Anything written by Dave Trott is great.
Yes.
What else? Somewhere along the line I read one of Ogilvy's books, but I don't remember which one it is.
Maybe
but
Ogilvy on advertising.
It was probably that, yeah. I also read Steve Harrison's book about Howard Gossage.
Oh, yes.
Called Changing the World is the Only Fit Work for a Grown Man, which is a wonderful book.
Gossage was an ad guy that seemed like he was way ahead of his time.
Oh, he was so ahead of his time. He was a monster. He was great. He was just if he came and saw the advertising world today, he would absolutely shoot himself in the head. Mm.
Or he'd say, he'd say, Hoffman, how did you allow this to happen?
Yeah.
Are there any upcoming books or recent ones that you are looking forward to seeing or might recommend?
Well, I'm kind of helping someone with a book right now. It's kind of, I'm going to sound egotistical here, but someone's doing a book about quotes from what I've said. And then explanations of it.
And, sounds good. Can you share with us any more about it?
No, okay. I can't. I shouldn't have even said that. But
you're going to leave us wanting more, Bob.
I hope so. Yeah, it's. I hope it's going to turn out to be a real project and be fun.
Okay. Well, good. Well, keep us keep me posted.
I will.
That sounds great. Yeah. How best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
Well, there's my blog called The Ad Contrarian, and you can find it at adcontrarian.com. There is my business website called Type A Group, and the website is typeagroup.com. And my book is available at Amazon. Marketers from Mars, consumers are from New Jersey. And actually, it's only available at Amazon. So you can find it there in both ebook and paperback forms. Mm-hmm. It's very inexpensive. I purposely price it very cheap because I don't make any money on it anyway. So what the hell? Nobody makes money writing anymore, right?
Right. And I appreciate you pricing it like that because the money that I saved, I was able to make a donation in your name to the Douglas Burdett Single Malt Scotch Fund.
The money you saved, you were able to spend on a good book.
No. Well, good. We'll make sure to link up all that for you.
Thank you.
The name of the book is Marketers Are From Mars, Consumers Are From New Jersey. The author is Bob Hoffman. Bob, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
My pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
And that closes the book on episode 73 of the Marketing Book Podcast. But please don't let the end of this episode be the end of what you can learn about modern marketing. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for links to all the things we talked about in this interview and access to free marketing guides. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. Okay, you've heard from me. Now I want to hear from you. I love hearing from listeners like you. I've received some great ideas from the listeners, so please keep them coming. Likewise, if I can help point you to the right book or other marketing resource, please let me know if I can help. Just go to marketingbookpodcast.com and leave me a message or connect with me on LinkedIn. Or heck, just tweet me up using hashtag marketingbook. And please join us next time as we talk with Eric Siegel about his book, Predictive Analytics, The Power to Predict Who Will Click, Buy, Lie, or Die. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. Great, great. I've been excited about speaking to you. And I think
it's really,
this is going to be a great interview. Love
your
book.
You need to get a life, dude. If you're excited about speaking to
Bob,
me,
yeah. If you think you're the first person that said that to me today,
yeah,
you got to get up earlier.